This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader, the trusted motoring marketplace. Follow us on our social media channels, hashtag Auto Central and at Auto Trader SA on Facebook and Twitter. Another week and quiet studio today. Just George and myself and Fazana. How are you, George?
How's it, Ty? How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well and yourself.
Good.
Fazana, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Sorry, just hang on a sec. Say that again.
I'm good, thanks. And you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Very good. Everyone have a good weekend.
Yeah, no, brilliant.
Absolutely
weekend.
Magic. Fantastic. I can't believe it's the 16th of October. It's crazy.
You know what? Probably for most people, 9 weeks before they go on holiday.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait. December's around the corner. You guys all going away?
Yeah, we're taking a bit of a break, but, you know, it's always too short.
Yeah, exactly. Always is. Always. Well, listen, you can change that. You're the CEO of the business, so we can.
It doesn't work like that for me, unfortunately.
just like extra 20 days each. It'll be
20
fantastic.
Days.
Exactly. Yeah. So quite a bit to get through today. Let's kick off as we usually do with some news from under the hood. And I see that the car brands Chrysler and Dodge to exit South Africa. So Fiat Chrysler Automobiles bid farewell to two of its car brands in South Africa, with the Chrysler and Dodge vehicle ranges no longer being available locally. And the reason this has come about is that the holding company, obviously in the States, are no longer building Chrysler and Dodge vehicles in right-hand drive configurations. So another two brands leaving South Africa.
Yeah, I think it's a sign of the times. And I don't think it's because of South Africa. I don't think it's because we did anything wrong.
No.
Or a political kind of reason. It's more these companies starting to look at the future differently.
Well, exactly. And I mean, a number of new brands entering, global markets, and we'll get into the electric stuff later on. But guys are really starting to change their focus.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking this morning, why aren't all cars either left or right-hand drive?
It's a good question. Maybe we should find out.
I think it might be something that we'd need to look into.
Like, I think it's really predominantly the Americans that are right-hand drive, right?
Yeah.
I mean, left-hand drive.
Left-hand drive, yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, how did that start?
Well, I don't know, because I think when Henry Ford built the first car, that steering wheel was in. It was like a scene. It was in the middle of.
Well, yeah, those cars had the steering in the middle. They were, it's funny how when they built that car. It was almost like they replicated how you ride a horse and carriage.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's probably with a bridle and
the rider in the middle.
Yeah.
And then it shifted over. Actually, that's a very good question. I've never asked that question.
I was asking this morning. Why don't they just build cars? You either left or you either right.
Right. Yeah.
And I wonder if it was a marketing thing back in the day where they were like, okay, cool. Well, let's upsells by putting the steering wheel on the other side of the vehicle. So anyway, something that needs to be looked in. But so Chrysler and Dodge are out. I can tell you, though, that the Fiat Group of Automobiles South Africa and Chrysler South Africa, responsible for the sales and after-sales business of obviously other brands like the Bath, the Alfa, the Fiat Professional, Mopar, Chrysler, Jeep, and Dodge brands, they will obviously continue to service and keep these cars on the roads. But just another two brands leaving the.
So I just googled that question quickly.
Okay.
And apparently, the predominant way in which people prefer the side people preferred to be was on the left hand side, and it comes from horse riding days, because the knights preferred to have their lance in their right hand, which meant they were on the left hand side of the lance. And that just translated into left-hand drive, the left-hand side.
Well, I would never have guessed that,
That's
ever.
Interesting.
I don't know.
How did we end up on the right-hand side?
We drive on the left-hand side, car is on the right-hand side. Yeah, so they prefer to be on the left-hand side. So if you imagine the way the knights ran against each other.
Yes, yeah.
Would be a pole in the center. They would be on the left-hand side of that. Of that
barrier
with the lance in their right hand.
Yeah.
And that's why we're on the left hand side of the road. Interesting.
Crazy.
Hey?
All from riding.
So how did the Americans get it wrong?
Well, they always do everything different, so.
Because they had guns on cowboys.
Cowboys. Well, yeah, that's where riding shotgun comes from.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you know how kids will call, oh, shotgun, I called shotgun. Yeah, shotgun actually was, so you had the guy who was, you know, controlling the horse and carriage.
Yeah.
And the man that sat on his left-hand side used to ride shotgun because he was the guy who carried the firearm.
Oh, wow.
So that's where riding shotgun comes from. Yeah, exactly. Obviously, you know, for our Durban listeners, we know that they had a terrible week last week. I mean, there was absolute carnage, you know, with the weather down in Durbs and obviously pictures all over the internet. But massive, massive flooding. And there's an article on our site just with regards to how you should drive in storms. And, you know, you just look at the photographs of the, I think it's the N3, that was absolutely, completely flooded.
It was terrible. You know, some of those images were absolutely horrific.
And we don't expect that kind of stuff to happen in South Africa because we don't really have too many natural disasters.
No, we don't. You know, but we do have occasional flooding, you know, both here in Joburg and it's the first time I've seen it so bad in KZN.
Yeah.
You know, we've had it in Johannesburg. I mean, when was it? A week or two ago.
Yeah.
Where the rains properly came down. But what do you do when your car is in a flood? And you know the tricks to kind of first of all get out of there alive. Don't worry about the car too much. If you can get out of there alive, but save the car from further damage. But don't try and switch it on when it's wet.
So you leave it, let it try and dry out.
Just let it dry. Because as soon as you switch that the ignition on, electricity flows through the car.
Yeah.
And something else is going to break.
Yeah. Well, I see one of the things, and these articles are on autotrader.co.za under our news and reviews section. But when caught in an unexpected flash flood, if you suddenly start to lose grip, it might be because the car is obviously starting to float. So what they say is you must actually open your door and let some water into the vehicle.
To give it some weight
so that you can actually try and drive out. But I think the first thing, and this is just natural, stay away. Don't cross like low-lying bridges. And, you know, people think, even 4x4s, if you're in 60 centimeters of water, that's deep enough for it to take your car down the river.
Yeah, I know. That's true. I mean, I've seen so many cowboy 4x4 drivers that and SUVs that think they can get across these things, and you know, unless you're a really experienced four-wheel drive driver, and most experienced four-wheel drive drivers would actually walk a river before they drive through that river.
Correct, check you the know, depth and all that kind of all stuff that with stuff. A stick and make sure that, okay, this is actually safe to cross.
So, you know, these the SUVs are not bulletproof.
No, they're definitely not. So, yeah, and I don't know if there's any, you know, more bad weather on its way to KZN, but hopefully we've seen the back of it and we don't have to deal with that kind of stuff again. But if you are out there and driving in the rain, just please, take care. Take care. I see government increases vehicle license fees. I see the Minister of Transport, Joe Maswanganyi, has announced that South African motorists can expect to pay more in national licensing transaction fees in 2018. This is not really going to break the bank, but fees will increase by a mere 30 rand, so from $42 to R72, obviously depending on the type of vehicle that you're driving. But this marks a significant increase compared to previous years, with the fee going up a mere 6 rand since 2009. So from 2009 to 2017, it's gone up $6, and now there's a 30 rand hike.
You know what? License fees are necessary, but where's the money going? Well, what's it being spent on?
Let me just I'll find it here, because it does say in terms of the Road Traffic Management Corporation. No, they actually it's been passed on to the fees will increase. The special classification vehicles. Well, obviously, there'll be a nominal fee with them.
Some of that fee goes to, you know, the road accident fund and maintaining the roads, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, let's see the roads being maintained. Let's see the positive effects of the additional 30 rand.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind paying it, but exactly. Like you say, as long as it gets used for you know, a relevant cause.
Course, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'll keep the roads safe.
Yeah.
Fix the potholes, fix the dongas.
Well, especially with the rains now. I mean, it's always after rains we see
the potholes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the traffic lights.
Yes. Well, Republic Road was out the whole day the other day.
Yeah. How many times have you, after the rain, you see the traffic lights out? And these fees should go to fixing those things.
Agreed. Totally agreed. I see. Here we go. Dubai, United Emirates, ride-hailing service Uber on Tuesday began offering its customers in Dubai the option to ride in one of its 50 new Tesla electric-powered vehicles. So a stark contrast to the large gas-guzzling sedans and luxury sports cars that dominate the Emirates, you know, six-lane highways. But yeah, 50 Teslas in Uber's fleet in Dubai, which is really, really good to see.
Yeah, that's awesome.
They said this partnership is to introduce electric-powered rides for customers is in line with the company's drive to provide riders with a new and progressive experience.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I mean, because these guys don't pay what we pay for fuel as well. That's why they can afford to drive those big gas guzzlers. But because I see their petrol is subsidized in the UAE.
Well, I mean, there's no shortage of fuel in the world. You know, 10 years ago, there was a shortage of fuel, apparent shortage of fuel. And then they found fuel, they found oil in the seas and yeah, and all over the place, and now apparently there's no shortage of fuel. But I reckon oil companies are going to be in trouble. OPEC, you know, the funny thing is OPEC reckons that 1% that there is going to be a 1% of cars in the world are going to be electric by the year 2040, whereas other bodies say about a third of the cars in the world will be electric by the year 2040. So you know, you can guarantee that somewhere between 1% and 30% of cars are going to be electric by 2040, because yeah, everybody's talking about those yeah numbers. But OPEC has lowballed that number at 1%. So if yeah they if the world underachieves on that number, OPEC's in trouble.
Well, I mean, they obviously have to try and do something. Otherwise, those guys are all going to be out of business, aren't they?
Oh, there's going to be such an oversupply of fuel in the world as a result of these electric cars. It's coming.
That's going to be interesting, because that will literally take – I mean, that's what the UAE has been built up on, hasn't it? They own the kind of the oil fields.
Yes, the oil fields and the fuel production and the oil production in the world. Yeah. So you know, the thinking at the moment is 2023, 2024 is when the tipping point will happen, and people will be driving more electric cars than ever before.
Yeah. So, I mean, Tesla, yeah, they opened up a showroom in Dubai in February, and the American electric car manufacturer chief, obviously Elon Musk, has said the company plans investing millions of dollars across the United Arab Emirates in supporting the infrastructure for electric vehicles, despite facing competition from the region's subsidized lower gas prices. So he's obviously confident that
electric
cars in Dubai are definitely going to happen.
It has to happen.
It has to
happen. And you know what? The batteries in those electric cars have got lithium. That means lithium ion battery.
Yeah.
There is an abundant supply of lithium in our ground. So I don't think I think the cost of these electric cars is just going to continue to fall.
Tell me, George, can I ask you a question? When you see a blue light brigade or you see cops on the highway, I remember what I was taught to do when I did my driver's license, but what's your go-to?
It's a difficult one to answer. I'm the CEO of a company, and I don't have an office.
Yes.
I sit with everybody in an open plan office, and I think the days of that kind of privilege needs to come to an end. So I don't know. I'm conflicted.
Well, so basically, what happened last week? There was a guy driving on the N3, and the blue light brigade sped up behind him and actually landed up kind of riding this guy off the road. They hit him. It was a bit of a hit and run. So following the stunt, the blue light vehicle can be seen obviously driving off in the video. These guys are just going on to say that, you know, at the end of the day, it's not up to the public to determine whether they deem it to be an emergency or not an emergency. So I think, you know, the standard protocol is when you see blue lights, just
get out of the
way. Move out of the way, exactly.
You know, I mean, the difference between a blue light brigade and an emergency, that's a different thing. But, you know, at the moment there are laws around it and we've got to respect
those. So they're saying exactly, if a car is carrying a blue or a red light, because not everybody can put a light on their vehicle, so you have to have a license to obviously do that, or you have to be, you know, authorized to do that. So if those guys are driving past you, you have to move out the way.
No, you got it. You can't take the law into your own hands. There are laws around those government vehicles.
So if a vehicle displays a blue light, it is the priority in traffic and you must move out of the way if it is safe to do so. You cannot decide which blue light are important and which are not. And do you have to wait, make way for government vehicles? Every motorist is legally obliged to give an immediate and absolute right of way to a vehicle displaying a red or a blue light. Mm. So in other words, just stay out of the way, guys.
It's irrelevant what your opinion is around the
exactly
the, what the situation is.
Yeah.
It is a legal vehicle with an emergency light on it. Get out of its way.
Yeah. So I see Nissan in Japan and in a bit of hot water. So, you know, we know that new cars are generally higher quality items and for very good reason. So every step of the manufacturing process is checked and double checked to ensure that the products conform to both the manufacturer's internal quality criteria as well as the consumption, emissions and safety requirements. And basically what's happened at Nissan in Japan, they've had to recall over 1.2 million vehicles because the guys that have been signing off the you know, the final checks and balances of these vehicles are not actually authorized to do so, but the paperwork states that the guys that are checking are not legally allowed to give that approval. So Nissan in a bit of hot water. It really doesn't affect South Africa too much. This has really just happened in Japan, but 1.2 million recalls and estimated to cost the company around $222 million.
I mean, how many of those were exported or were none of them exported?
No, none of them were exported. No. So this is just obviously vehicles.
Which means it doesn't affect Nissan drivers in South Africa.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. So the Nissans that we get are either sourced from the UK, India or Thailand.
Yeah.
So we're in the clear there. But not really good that, you know, companies in this day and age are, I don't know, taking shortcuts.
Well, I think, you know what, I think it's been happening forever. It's just come to light.
Yeah. I see Ford boss Jim Hackett, who obviously been in the company for 100 days, is steering the U.S. car giant into changing industry, shifting resources from traditional cars to SUVs. So the question asked, is Ford planning to move away from building traditional vehicles? I don't ever see that happening, but there is far more focus on building hybrids and sticking to their kind of their bigger cars.
Yeah, you know, I mean, all of these are just signs that the automotive industry is in a state of change.
Yeah.
And all of the manufacturers are looking at their future path. You know, what do they get into? Because if they stay the same forever,
yeah,
you know, chances are that they'll meet their demise.
Well, let me ask you this question: as the CEO and as the head of the business, how far ahead do you have to look? I mean, you know, we don't just look 3 or 4 months. I mean, you obviously sit, you know, with the board and management and go, guys, you know, what's happening in 2 years? What's happening in 3 years? Where are we going?
I think it's less about what's exactly happening and more
sure.
about a direction.
Yes.
You know, and that I always say you need to have your eyes firmly pinned on a vision. And I describe a vision as if you look at the horizon and there's a forest, you don't see the veins on the leaves of the trees. You don't
exactly.
even see the leaves. You just see the shape of the trees.
Correct.
And that's all you need in the vision is a direction. And as a result of that, you can steer that ship
Correct.
Into that direction.
Yeah.
And then weather the storms as they come along. So I think a lot of these car manufacturers are looking into the future, looking at that vision and saying, well, you know what, we need to start changing direction. And a lot of these companies are big tankers. So you battle to turn them.
Correct. Yeah. And you've got to start turning a lot sooner than it's not as nimble as a car. You've got
it's
to
not
turn
a speedboat.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. George, last week was the Japanese Grand Prix. Am I right?
Yes.
It was Japanese Grand Prix, and we've got the American Grand Prix coming up next weekend. And it was obviously a MotoGP race this weekend where Andrea Dovizioso beat Marc Marquez and Danilo Pedrucci. But I see that Hamilton is now 59 points in the clear, and if he wins next weekend, he could even be handed the championship sooner rather than later.
Yeah, so I mean, it depends on where Vettel comes next weekend. So, you know, if Vettel's number two, that's not going to happen that easily. You know, it is, that gap is starting to increase to my disappointment.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, you know, the Ferrari boss was looking obviously very, very glum after the race because he's had untold trouble with his vehicle over the last couple of races.
It's been car trouble. I mean, I think Vettel is, you know, the top driver in the world. That's just my opinion.
Sure.
He's the top driver in the world. And as a matter of fact, if you go and look at the income that each of these drivers make, Vettel's paid the most.
Oh, really?
He's even paid more than Hamilton's paid. So he is the best driver in the world, and it shows in his income.
Yes.
And I think barring the car trouble and his hot-headedness, I mean, I'm a Vettel supporter, but yeah. He is a little bit hot-headed. He shouldn't have crashed into the back. Oh, well. Swerved into the side of Hamilton, yeah. You know, he shouldn't have done some of the things he's done. Like he's had two crashes effectively that could have been avoided,
yeah.
And he shouldn't have done those things, and maybe he would have been closer to Hamilton. So I don't know if the best driver is winning, but I think the coolest, most consistent driver is winning.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, you got to take your hats off to Hamilton. He's clearly good at what he does, and he's a professional athlete, irrespective of whether you like him as a person or not.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, who we to judge, but
he's absolutely a brilliant driver, and he's and the one thing you've got to take your hat off to Hamilton is his consistency.
Absolutely. So stay tuned, and we'll obviously unpack that the US Grand Prix in 2 weeks time, but really, really exciting things happening in Formula One. And now, just before we get into our kind of more topical content, I know that Toyota's highly successful Fortuna 4x4 Challenge is back, and you can stand a chance to win a Toyota Fortuna by rallying behind your hero. You can find an article on autotrader.co.za on our news and review section for all the details, but I have taken the liberty of just getting a little bit more information about this competition. And you can either enter on Twitter, on Facebook, or you can obviously, there's a number that you can dial, so *120*62800#, and then you just follow the prompts. But quite a nice prize. These guys are giving away a Fortuna 2.4 GD6 4x4 automatic just by sitting on your couch or at your desk and by simply entering this competition. And quite nice that they've chosen kind of super fit. So I think there's a challenge part to this competition. They've got Janelle De Villiers, they've got Opa Mahoji from the Cheetahs, Red Bull mountain biker Bianca Hoare and obstacle course champion Heineke Danhauser. And these are the four guys that the challenge is with. So you literally just go and back one of your who you think is going to win the challenge, and who knows, you might be driving away in a brand new Fortuna, which is a fantastic
prize.
That's
a fantastic prize. That's
yeah,
an
really,
awesome
really
car.
Nice car. I'm a huge fan. I always have been. They're just. Solid,
I mean, I don't think the Fortuna's changed. I love Fortuna. I think the new Fortuna looks more like a ladies' car.
Yeah, it's a little bit softer.
It's
up front,
a bit softer.
Yeah.
The lines are softer. It's not as rugged as the previous model.
Yeah.
But still an excellent car.
Absolutely. And then some really, really exciting news. But I don't know how much of a gamer you are, George. I don't know if you own a PS4.
I don't.
You don't? Fazana, do you play games much?
I do, but I don't have my own PS4.
Okay. All right. Okay. So just so that you know, and I'm letting a little bit of a cat out the bag, but the new Gran Turismo Sport game is actually launching on Wednesday. And this is a kind of a global launch for PlayStation. Mm. And what's really, really cool is Autotrader are going to be running a competition on our site from Monday next week. And if you you literally have to log on to our site, subscribe to our newsletter, and we're giving away a limited edition PS4 console and the new Gran Turismo game, which is really cool. And
I'm not a gamer, but I believe gaming is a big thing.
I mean, Raid, they've just had Rage now, which is a massive kind of gaming convention, comics and games and stuff like that, and it looked like it was really, really well supported. But I know that Gran Turismo, in terms of driving games, is probably the premier kind of driving game out there, and I have played it before, and what's really nice is we're going to get to test drive it this week, so I'll have a full report when we next back in studio. But what's really, really cool is and they've just the way they simulate and replicate
real driving,
it's really, really fantastic. So yeah, you're sitting on your couch, but you really do get a sense that you know whether you're in a Ferrari or in a Lamborghini, and the vehicles, the way they laid out and how they handle, is really, really tuning, because they actually produce this game with the manufacturers. There's even concept cars that they've now got into the game. So they've taken concepts, they've got either Bugatti, Aston Martin and Mercedes-Benz concept vehicles that you can drive. There's also over 120 140 cars that you can choose from, 19 locations across 27 layouts. So you can drive the Tokyo Expressway, you can drive the Nürburgring. So they really have replicated real world kind of driving situations. So that's really, really cool. So I'm really looking forward to get my hands on that. And like I said, that will be launching in stores on Wednesday this week. So if you are a gamer and you're into driving games, then go make sure you get your hands on the new Gran Turismo, which is really, really exciting.
Ty, just for our listeners,
yes,
those that are already subscribed to the newsletter,
yes,
do they can't stand a chance to win?
No,
do they?
No, they would. I think, we'll have to actually just, that's actually a very, very good question. So I'm sure that we'll have an entry mechanism through one of our social media channels. So other
we'll find out and tweet it.
Yeah, exactly. We'll let the guys know. But thanks for asking that question. I hope Julia is listening. Right, and then I want to unpack here quickly, because I see that recent news headlines excitedly announced that BMW has to pay back the money, and not for any shame, like kind of home improvement deals, but because of its so-called on-the-road charges. Now, we all know that when you buy a vehicle in this country, that there are additional expenses that you kind of have to fork out for, and you know, these guys have and it's not BMW the OEM, it's one or two of the dealerships, but there's an article on our site, and I just thought it'd be good for us to kind of unpack to the listeners you know, what are on the road fees all about. And if we just have a look at, I mean, there's a there's a 6 or 7 additional costs that are involved with you after you've purchased a vehicle to actually put it onto the road. So I just wanted to chat about that a little bit, and actually just get some of your guys' opinions with regards to on the road fees. So the first thing that you could look at is like the pre-delivery inspection safety check, and I understand that has to happen if you're buying a second-hand vehicle. That car has to be looked at, and we know that mechanics and technicians don't work for free, so there are costs associated with that. But
Well, the pre-inspection safety check and delivery report, you know, that just gives you peace of mind that this car has been checked.
Correct.
So, you know, that's one of the costs. Certificate of roadworthiness, there's a third-party cost there. So obviously there's costs involved. You know, when you buy a car, delivery fuel, if you're not picking up the car, you know, then there could be delivery fuel costs involved. And it's less about whether these are right and wrong, but more about, you know, the consumer discussing this with the car dealer, yeah, and understanding these things up front. Initial fuel, you know, some dealerships sell cars with a quarter tank of fuel,
yeah,
you know, or slightly less, and some dealerships sell cars with a full tank of fuel, and then some charge for the full tank of fuel or not. Now, is that a cost to you? Probably not, you know, depending on whether, you know, yeah, you're going to fill that car in the future or not.
Well, I see that this initial fuel cost as well, is that's also for, obviously, you know, when you go and test drive a vehicle, someone's got to pay for that.
Exactly.
Someone's got to pay for that petrol.
Yeah.
So that's another cost. And then the HPI and history clearance. Obviously, you can maintain. You can get. I mean, we know we've got vehicle check. On Auto Trader, where you can actually just log the VIN number, and it will give you a kind of history report about that vehicle. So whether it's been in an accident or you know, if there's claims against it or if it's been damaged.
Well, I think that's an important check, that HPI clearance report. Administrative fees, you know, that could range, but again, you got to check with the dealership and understand what those are up front before you sign on the dotted line.
So basically, and then obviously there's financial services board fees, which these guys regulate the actions of the dealership finance. So a dealership can't offer finance if it's not part of this financial services board. And there's obviously keys, and then cleaning or valet. You know that every brand new car needs to be cleaned thoroughly. Mm. So do pre-owned ones, but someone's got to pay for that as well.
Yeah, I think it's less about what's on that list and more about discussing these things with the dealer up front. And many people don't. You're so excited. It's a brand new car or, you know, a brand new secondhand car that, you know, often these on-the-road costs come at you as a surprise.
Yes.
Don't let it come at you as a surprise.
Yeah.
Understand that they're there.
Yes.
And discuss it with the dealer up front.
Yeah, but you are well within your rights to have those discussions with the dealership. And like the article So it says here, insist on a detailed invoice when you purchase a car from a dealership, be it new or pre-owned, and let them show you exactly how much they charge for administration fees or how much the certificate of roadworthiness costs. And then, you know, they say bargain like your life depends on it. So I'm sure that you can have a conversation with the dealership. And if there's anything that they can't really explain to you or justify that exact cost, I think you're well within your right to push back a bit. Some interesting stuff there that a lot of people, you know, because you see the car, you see its listed price, you go to your bank, you know that you can afford it, and then you get there and, you know, you might have to shell out a couple of extra grand that you might not have.
Well, I mean, make it one of your questions when you initially inquire about that car. What are the on the road costs in this car? What are the additional fees that are not listed? Yeah. And get those up front, because then you're doing your homework.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of it from Auto Talk and our content from this morning. So, like we said, 4x4 Toyota Fortuner competition. Gran Turismo, really, really cool. Some nice competitions happening there. And we were chatting to Chad this week, and Chad has done a review for us. And Chad has reviewed the Suzuki Ignis. And I'm going to head over to Chad, and he can let us know all about this vehicle.
Now, the name itself is very new to the country. We've never had an Ignis before, but it is a name that has been used overseas for other Suzuki products. The Ignis is a little, well, what Suzuki deems an urban crossover. So it's geared for the city and for residential areas, but it's not quite as big as a compact SUV. It is, however, bigger than a Super Mini. So, what is it about? Well, it offers you a slightly raised seating position, a driving position that is a little more command than what you're going to get in some of the other Suzuki offerings. It's also going to offer a little more ground clearance, so there's a little bit of peace of mind when it comes to our rough and tumble roads in and around the cities. You get three different derivatives. You get the 1.2 GL, the 1.2 GLX, and the 1.2 GLX Auto. We were testing the 1.2 GLX with a manual gearbox. Now it's powered by a 1.2-litre four-cylinder petrol engine. It's devoid of a turbo, so it doesn't make too much power. It makes 61 kilowatts, 113 newton meters, and it doesn't sound like much. But here's the beauty. The little Ignis only weighs 850 kilograms. We really love throwing this little car around. It is proper nippy, it'll do highway speeds without a problem, and getting in and out of parking bays and the likes, an absolute dream. Just due to the short, small dimensions, and the fact that the wheels sit in all four corners. And the styling is a little quirky. We haven't really seen much on the roads that looks similar to it, but it is typical Suzuki. A lot of the cues in the Ignis are based on the SC100. It's also a vehicle that we never got here locally. It's got these slats on the C-pillar, the rear pillar, and that was from when, well, the SC100 was actually rear-engined, and those were used as cooling fins. Well, the Ignis carries those over. It's also got a similar headlight and grille treatment that you would find on the SC100. Then there's things like the blacked-out pillars, which are reminiscent of the Suzuki Swift. There's also the clamshell bonnet, and that reminds us of the Suzuki Vitara. It's pretty well spec'd as well, so you're getting a lot of creature comforts inside. You're getting climate control, and I mean full-blown climate control, not just air conditioning. Set the temperature and forget about it. We've got power steering and electric windows. There's an onboard computer. We've got that Bluetooth connectivity. And there's power sockets all over the place. Not only power sockets, but you're also going to get a lot of storage space. So there's little cubby holes and bins all over the place. It really makes it great to live with. Very easy to live with. Now this vehicle is priced, well, really similar to some of the other Suzuki offerings, namely the Celerio and the Swift. Well, Swift is going to start at about 155,000 Rand for the 1.2 GA hatch. And the Celerio is going to top out the most expensive one with an automatic gearbox at 165,000 Rand. The cheapest Ignis is 169,900 Rand. Call it 170,000 Rand. So it's right in the mix there. The 1.2 GLX that we were testing was, well, near as makes no difference, 190,000 Rand. The interior is really nicely designed, the exterior is nicely designed, and it's super light on fuel. They claim an average of 5.1 litres per 100. And being a Suzuki, you know that you can get it under that. And we were in fact trying to get it over 6 litres per 100 and do what we wanted to, we just couldn't get it right. So, The little Celeria is going to be going up against the likes of the Renault Sandero Stepway and the VW Cross App. And those are the vehicles that it's going to be compared up against when the jurors are taking a look at it for the West Bank Car of the Year. I think it stands a pretty good chance. The VW Cross App is a cracking vehicle, but I don't know that this one is going to be, well, head and shoulders above, because that's something that the jurors are looking for, is a vehicle that is head and shoulders above the others. Yes, the Ignis has nice things like LED daytime running lights and xenon headlights, or even LED headlights if you go for that GLX model. It's small, it's compact, it's easy to maneuver, and it's got a respectable boot. The thing is, it falls a little shy in terms of the service plan that they're offering. Now, Suzuki has just recently extended their warranties and their service plans, but that's only for a limited time. The standard warranty is 3 years and 100,000 kilometers, which is about par for the course. The service plan, though, is a little shy. It's 2 years and 30,000 kilometers, which means it's going to give you two services in that service plan. You may be able to extend that, but that's going to add a little bit to the price and probably push it a little closer to that 200,000 mark. If you're looking for an automatic one, well, that's already going to be over that 200,000 rand mark at 205,000 rand. We really liked the little Ignis. It was great to live with. It was light on fuel. It was fun to drive and it had tons of character. The styling is not to everybody's taste and the interior detailing, well, maybe a little light for some with some of the white plastics. But we really liked it and we think it's a great build quality despite the fact that it is built by Maruti Suzuki in India. It's been so well built that it's received the green light from Japan, so I guess that's not a bad thing. We're just going to have to see how it fares up against the competition in this year's Car of the Year finals. So, wait around, we're going to have a video dropping on the Suzuki Ignis. You'll be able to see and hear it in action. And until then, we'll see you next time. Cheers, bye-bye.
Thank you, Chad. So that was the review of the Suzuki Ignis, and that will be on our site. I think they did a first driving impression, and there's obviously a video that, that's gone out that will be on our site. So if you want to go and check that out, you can go and have a look and get a little bit more information about that that vehicle. And again, I know we spoke about this, but one of the finalists in the Car of the Year, which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So Suzuki making some nice, some good product.
Yeah, no, Suzuki does make a good product. I particularly like the Suzuki Swift.
Yes,
and you know, they make some good cars.
So little cars. I mean, that little Jimny's also. Yeah. That's a fun little kind of thing, eh?
Yeah, the Jimny's brilliant.
Yeah. All right, let's get into our tech segment and some really nice news. And here's a effect. For you, George, that might defy some logic, but by the end of the year, electric car maker Tesla will have burned through more than 10 billion without even having made 10 cents. Yet companies around the world are lining up to obviously compete against it. So almost 50 new pure electric car models will come to market globally between now and 2022, including vehicles from Daimler AG, Volkswagen AG, and even British inventor James Dyson, who manufactures vacuum cleaners, is getting into the game. And he announced last week that he'll be investing £2 billion to develop an electric car.
The witches of the world will be happy.
The
witches of the world will be happy. Yeah. The electric broom.
There we go.
You know, and this just goes to my statement earlier around this 2022, 2023 milestone. Everyone's shooting for the early 2020s. And you know, although Tesla has not made a cent of profit, and you know, they're expected to start making profits now with the Model 3 into the future, but even although they haven't made a cent of profit, it shows what the future holds and where we will be in 10 years time, not even in 10 years time, probably even 5 years time, in that electric cars will be the order of the day. And you know, countries like Britain, I think Germany, there are a few European countries who have actually put a ban on fossil fuel cars by some as early as 2025, but most by 2040, where by 2040 you won't be able to drive a fossil fuel car. And then it'll become the thing of the past.
Yeah, exactly. So, like the, well, not that the horse and cart has ever left all of us, but to that point, I see that regulators in Beijing have laid out a plan to mandate electric vehicle production in China, while California requires car makers to build more electric vehicles or be forced to buy credits from rivals. So Elon Musk and his sleek cars have obviously captured the imagination of the Americans to the point where customers and investors are still throwing money at his vehicle. But I think the average consumer out there can see the vision.
It's less about the what I refer to as the vulgar mechanics of cash, in this industry, and more about building a sustainable future.
Yeah,
and that's what it's about. And I think anybody that believes in electric vehicles has that in the forefront of their mind. The naysayers who, and I've spoken to a couple of people, oh no, but we're not going to get the raw sound of the V8. You probably will. I mean, they're going to be around for a long time, probably be on the tracks and those kinds of things. So you can go and see it there. I mean, if you want to go and see horses clobbering their feet on the ground and that rumble, you can still go to a racetrack. You don't need to be a cowboy to watch a horse race.
Yeah.
So this is the way of the future, and you can see the world is behind it.
Yeah, well, the numbers are quite staggering. So in North America alone, the number of electric vehicles was soared to 47 by the first quarter of 2022, and that's up from 24 in the third quarter of this year. China's electric vehicle market will go from 80 from 61, and European buyers will have 58 electric choices, up from 31. I mean, that's staggering.
It's staggering. It's absolutely mind-blowing, but it's brilliant.
Yeah, well, I mean, there'll be over 136 electric vehicles on the market by the end of that year, and that doesn't even include the hybrid models or fuel cells, so that's purely electric, 136.
Yeah, I think we're going to leapfrog this hybrid thing. I'm not so sure if I was a car manufacturer, I'd be investing in hybrid technologies.
Yeah,
I'd be shooting for the total electric and make the game head towards that direction.
And obviously, yeah, I think so too. I mean, fully electric is where it's going. So why
invest in the middle?
Exactly, 100%.
You know, it's almost like. When you want to invest in a particular mobile phone without a keypad, and you're in the days of the old telecom dialer phones,
exactly.
And you know that it's going to go to touchscreen, why invest in the keypad?
Yeah,
so I think that middle step is not going to be long lived.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, there's some really, really nice new models coming out as well. So VW, their Audi brand, will start building the e-tron Quattro, which is a luxury SUV, and that should be ready in about 2018. And they're doing a Sportback Coupe, which will come out in 2019. Porsche obviously bringing out a Mission E Sport sedan concept car as well. BMW, obviously, there's the i3, the i8. And they'll have that we spoke about the Mini that they're bringing out, and there's also an X3 compact SUV in 2020 that's going to be coming out.
Well, I mean, so if we talk about South Africa particularly, what can we expect in terms of electric vehicles in South Africa first? And I think there's three companies mainly. There are probably some others, but there are three companies mainly that we're going to see the electric car from. The first one is the Nissan Leaf.
Yes.
The new 2018 Nissan Leaf is unbelievable. I've done some research on that little Nissan Leaf, and I think it's going to be a phenomenal car. The second is BMW. They've already started the charge with their i3 and i8. I think they're doing some interesting things in Cape Town with charging facilities or plans to do charging facilities. So BMW is the second one.
Yeah.
And then, I can never have a list without Tesla being on it. And, excuse me for my brand loyalty. I'm almost a cult follower of Tesla, like I am with Apple.
Yep.
If the Model 3 does come to South Africa, which I'm hoping it does, Elon says it will, and I keep tweeting at him to try and get him to think about us more. But if the Model 3 does come here, then that'll be the benchmark.
Exactly, 100%. Well, I see there is something that I wanted to touch base on here, but Greg Blanford is the director of Rubicon, who's the authorized Tesla energy reseller in South Africa, says that while neither he nor his company are aligned with Tesla Motors, he believes that they'll start to arrive in South Africa in early 2019. So we literally
You it's know, on the doorstep.
It's definitely on the doorstep. So maybe just over a year away. Yeah, he was going on to say that he's actually, and the reason he knows is because he's one of the guys who's put a deposit down to drive one. So, you know, they're going to have to, you know, come good and make sure that those cars are
arrive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not so keen on the Model 3. And that's probably why I haven't put down a deposit. I want the Model S.
Yes. Is that what you? So that's where you're going.
Yeah. If the 3 comes to South Africa, then I reckon it won't be too difficult to import the S.
The S, yeah,
because then yeah. the support will be here.
Yeah. Well, what's really nice to know is that these guys are working on the Powerwall 2. This is obviously one of the cells that they'll use for as part of the charging infrastructure.
Yeah.
They'll be here in early 2018. And these guys are independently working on the electric vehicle charging infrastructure in South Africa with suppliers in Europe, and they'll slowly help develop the local charging network in South Africa with various stakeholders in the private and government sector. He says, "Yeah, we are in very early stages in this development, but they're ready for a scaled rollout of infrastructure." And he also states that we're not as up to speed, but they are really rolling this out.
I can attest to that because on your way to Oliver Tambo Airport,
yeah.
on the left hand side of the highway, there's a big Tesla, what looks like a warehouse. So I think that's where their facility is. But there's a massive Tesla sign there.
Sure.
Initially, well, I got excited. I thought, maybe that's an undercover warehouse, but yeah. no, I think it's Tesla Energy.
Do you think they'll roll this out with garages and stuff? Like that, our charging infrastructure. I mean,
what do you mean garages?
Yeah, so well, do you think they'll put charging stations at petrol stations?
So, you know, if you look at what Tesla's done in America with their supercharger stations, you know, I would worry a little bit with electrical infrastructure next to fuel. I don't know the engineering side of
sure.
whether that can exist or coexist okay. in one place, and whether there's dangers there with okay. Having electrically charged vehicles next to big fuel tanks.
Yeah.
You know, it could be problematic, but you know, nothing stops an investor from starting to build these charging infrastructures, and I think BMW. May be the first to move because of their i3 and their i8, and perhaps Nissan.
Yes.
You know, we may see something like that. I don't know.
I think the natural thing there is that obviously they'll use their dealerships, or do you think they'll put in actually physical, you know, charging stations?
I don't know if there's enough dealerships today to do that properly and enough space. I honestly, it's a good question to ponder.
Yeah.
What would the charging situation look like in South Africa?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, yeah, like you say, dealerships, you know, there's not one on every single corner.
Yeah.
What we do have in this country are shopping malls galore. So it would make sense that you would have charging stations at strip malls and
yes.
shopping centers.
To have the shopping centers actually support some sort of charging network or charging facility would be spot on. You know, so I think it's an interesting question to kind of keep talking about.
I think so too. I think the only thing that I sit and go is, you know, it's bad enough when we have, you know, a petrol price increase and you sit two or three cars waiting for somebody to fill up in front of you. But can you imagine having to wait 40 minutes, you know, behind somebody else? If you're three in a queue, you know, you got to go and kill an hour and 20 minutes before you can have your vehicle charged.
Well, that's where the Tesla trumps everyone else. And that is you can have a quick battery replacement. So they physically pull the battery out of the car
and just put
a fresh battery in that's fully charged, and you're ready to go.
It would probably make sense to travel like that though anyway, wouldn't you? So you'd have a spare battery hand.
I don't know. You know, I think those batteries are really heavy.
And big. Are they big?
Yeah, they're big. If you imagine the battery in these electric cars are almost like a AA battery.
Okay.
Slightly bigger than the AA battery. Mm. And there are hundreds of them in each fuel cell. and they cooled with liquid coolant in between.
Okay.
And they're lithium ion batteries. So literally it is like a AA battery, and hundreds of them, and they exist on the floorboard of your car.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, if on the Tesla particularly, you can remove them out the side, almost like a drawer,
yeah,
like a slot that goes into the side of the car. So you know, instead of waiting for 45 minutes to charge your car, maybe that's the way the battery will be replaced. But then again, that'll only happen on long trips, because these cars can now mostly do over 250 kilometers range.
Well, just to go back to the Nissan Leaf, I see that they're stating that you get about a 380 k's off a single charge. And I know that a quick charge on that Leaf is about 40 minutes, but a long charge is a couple of.
So now you can imagine. I mean, you don't have a fuel pump at your house, whereas with the electric car you do.
Correct.
So if you're doing 50 k's to work, I mean, who does more than 50 k's to work? Not many, many people.
Yeah, I don't think the majority.
So if you're doing 50 k's to work one way, maybe for Zana, 50 k's to work one way, which is 100 k's a day, and you can do 380 kilometer range.
Yeah.
And you plug your car in when you get home, you've got no commuting problems.
Well, I think most of us have become accustomed to making a plan with our phones. You know, you get home, you charge it, it lasts you the next day, and it just becomes part of your cycle. You'll actually work your routine out.
You will work your routine out, I reckon. And the only challenge will be long distance traveling.
Yeah.
But we've got years to figure that out.
No, exactly. And then, you know what? There'll probably be companies that will start like portable charging stations. So this little car will ride up next to yours and it will have a charger and just, you know, plug in on the side of the road. And
human beings are unbelievably resilient.
Exactly. We always make a plan, don't we?
Exactly. Always. Especially South Africans.
Yes. I mean, we've got not too much left time-wise here. But I see the US passes a bill to speed up the deployment of self-driving cars. So the US government voted on Wednesday, the 6th of September, to speed the introduction of self-driving cars by giving the federal government authority to exempt automakers from safety standards not applicable to the technology, and to permit deployments of up to 100,000 of these vehicles annually over the next several years. So it's really not just even the auto manufacturers. I mean, governments are starting to see this, and I think, you know, we've spoken about this, and we probably say it all the time.
It's first world governments,
first world governments. This is definitely, you know, where we're going. But the bill permits the deployments of up to 25,000 self-driving vehicles in its first year, rising up to 100,000 vehicles annually. And it's just crazy to think that they were stating here that early estimates indicate that there were more than 40,000 traffic fatalities last year in the States, and 94% of those caused by human error. So we're definitely going to slow down the fatality rate by people getting into autonomous vehicles.
Absolutely. I mean, all of the technology on cars today have changed the game in terms of lane keeping, cruise control,
following
distances, and you know, emergency braking, emergency brake assist. All of those things have made things a lot better, and they're all non-human technologies in the cars. So self-driving cars can think a lot faster than humans.
I mean, I remember when I was doing my driver's license, my mom always used to say to me, you obviously got to watch the car in front of you, but you also want to be looking 2 to 3 cars
ahead
because if you can pick it up obviously sooner, or you see something happening, it gives you time to. And these cars are going to do that by themselves, because
they've got laser and radar technologies.
Yeah.
So what they do is they can tell via their systems what is around them, but they can also send signals. And this is what Tesla changed probably a year or two ago, when one of their cars had an accident. And it was for that very reason. The car, the Tesla had an accident only because it relied on reading the car in front of it,
yes,
and didn't read the car in front of that.
Yes.
So now they built the camera systems to be able to send signals over and under the car in front of it, so that it can see what the traffic is doing ahead. So the technology just gets better and better and better, and a lot faster than a human can think.
Do you think that these cars will kind of sync with each other?
They already are. So it's called Tesla calls it their swarm, their swarm system. And the cars learn from each other through their central servers.
So if I'm driving in a car that's 3 or 4 cars behind, let's say another Tesla, in front of me and that car brakes, will it send a signal to say that we're slowing down? I mean, do you think it's going to be?
I don't think that's what it does.
Okay.
But what the autonomous cars do is it learns the roads and
yes.
it learns the road conditions.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, the car is self-sufficient in its own senses, so it doesn't get information from the outside to tell it, oh, hold on a second, there's another Tesla two blocks up the road. I don't think that that exists, but it's more about learning the roads, learning the driving conditions, and then in the future, you know, telling the car where potholes are, telling the car where accidents are, or where traffic is coming to a sudden stop. That kind of thing is what their swarm technology is capable of doing.
Sure. I mean, yeah, it boggles my mind that, you know, I don't know, is the human becoming like...
Cyborg.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. We
well, I mean, Tesla's car is effectively artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Because it learns.
Yes.
There's nobody writing code telling the car, well, this road turns at that camber and you have
yes.
to take it at this speed and, you know, you can't go over that speed.
But it's got the systems built in so that once it's done that drive once, it will...
It learns.
It learns.
And it learns from each other.
Correct.
So one car can drive that route and another car learns from driving that route. So that you can imagine the exponential learning that these cars are going on.
Well, I don't know if this is good news, but I've just seen another article now, George. But it says here, Tesla on Thursday, October the 12th, said that it was recalling the Model X Sport utility vehicle to fix second row back seats, which might shift forward during crashes. But I think that's...
Well, it's you know, other car makers suffer from the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then we've got some really nice events that are coming up. We know that Auto Circus is happening 18th and 19th of November, and that's Auto Circus powered by Auto Trader, and that's in conjunction, well, and featuring Gymkhana Grid. So some really world-class drivers coming out to perform out at Carnival City, and we're obviously a part of that. And I think it's just, again, it's about us taking our brand to the people and you know, getting involved in experiences where you know, consumers can have tangible experiences with the Auto Trader brand, which I think is really, really fantastic.
It's going to be an awesome weekend.
Yeah, I think it is. And we also know that somebody's got a really, really hot lap lined up with one of the top drivers, Mr. Ken Block. So I'm sure you're looking forward to that, huh?
I am.
Good stuff. Well, guys, that's the show this week. It really, really has, as these hours do, they do fly by. And yeah, if you're on the roads, keep it safe. All of our articles are on our site, autotrader.co.za, under the news and review section. So if you need to understand or know what's happening in the world of motoring, you can simply log on to autotrader.co.za. And if you're looking to buy or sell a car, there's no better place to do it. So yeah, we'll see you online, and we'll see you back here in exactly 2 weeks.
Cheers.
Fantastic. Fazana, thank you very much. We'll see you soon as well.
Thanks, sir.
This is CliffCentral.com.